And some said, yeah, it's him. And others said, no, he only looks like him. But once you know it's a miracle, once you know that it is that blind man, and that blind man now sees, then a miracle's been performed. A great miracle. It's a miracle that no one has ever seen before. They say that several times through here, and I'll say it too, that there's just a strange thing that a man who has been blind, and everybody knew him. He sat around that pool waiting to get in, all that kind of thing. But if it's a great miracle, then everybody ought to be happy. But you know what? There is always room for doubt with some people. Yeah, as was with them. Verse 14 says that it was performed on the Sabbath day. Oh my. The Sabbath day? Then Jesus, according to them, was a sinner, and no sinner can perform a miracle. How's he a sinner? Well, he worked on the Sabbath day, making that clay. That's work. You can't do that. And so this whole thing, what's a great miracle, has been really turned into a great mistake. So there's no doubt the blind man can see. You can't change that. So if you can't do that, then we got to figure out, was this man ever blind? So the Pharisees called his parents and said, they'll know. So they said to her, is this your son? Yes, he's our son. Was he born blind? Yes, he was born blind. And that's all we know. We're not going to say anything more, the parents said. They were afraid to get messed up with the Pharisees. So the Pharisees turned back to that formerly blind man, and that's where we pick it up now, in verse 24. The blind man defends Jesus. The case for the prosecution comes first, naturally. In verses 24 to 29, we see the case for what they say, the prosecutors say, against Jesus. So, first of all, in verse 24, they have a demand. A second time they summoned the man, and who had been blind, and they said to him, give God the glory. And they said, we know this man is a sinner. So according to the Pharisees then, if you say Jesus is a sinner, you're giving God the glory. Isn't that what it says? Give God the glory. We know this man was a sinner. Admit that. So that was their demand. Why is he a sinner? Why he healed on the Sabbath day? That's his problem. But the Sabbath allowed for deeds of mercy. You could, on the Sabbath day, you could, in Matthew 12, Jesus says this. Jesus said to them, what man is there among you that who has a sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will he not take it hold of it and lift it out? And how much more valuable then is a man than a sheep? So then, it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. That was in Matthew chapter 12, where a similar place. Yeah, the Sabbath was not a rigid thing. You had to sit there and say this kind of thing all day long. You have to use your head. And God did allow that. So the demand was really a false demand. Then comes the debate. Verses 25 to 27. He replied, that is, the man replied, whether he's a sinner, I don't know. But I do know, one thing I do know is that I was blind, now I see. The Gaithers have a good song about this. Go ask the man who was blind, now sees. Go ask him. Well, they were asking him. And that's a pretty tough argument. I was blind, now I see. So, when they ask him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? And he had already told them this, you know. If he said to them now, he put mud on my eyes. Oh, that's work. And those Pharisees are going to go crazy. And so he didn't tell them. So he doesn't give them a chance this time. Here's his answer. What did he do to you? Here's what he says. I have told you already, and you didn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to be his disciples? This is why some commentators say that this is sarcasm. I don't know. I'm not too sure. Just think about it. The man found Jesus, and Jesus opened his eyes. And then he said, I want to follow him. Well, he thought, well, maybe they want to follow him too. Don't you get that feeling sometimes you're so into following Jesus, loving Jesus, serving Jesus? And you get to that, you say, why doesn't everybody want to do this? And you find somebody who listens to the word, and you say, yeah, don't you want to be Jesus' disciple too? See? Well, I think that's what he's thinking. So he says, do you want to be his disciples? So that was the demand and the debate. Then comes the derision. They hurled insults at him, it says. They said, you are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as far as this fellow goes, we don't even know where he came from. Now, question. How do you know whether a Pharisee is lying? You look at his lips. If the lips are moving, he's lying. That was an old Clinton joke. Way back. Now, they had two lies here. The first lie is, we are followers of Moses. Followers of Moses? Yeah. Well, God told Moses something. God said to Moses in chapter 18 of Deuteronomy, verse 18, I will raise up a prophet from among you, among their countrymen, like you, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all the words I command him. Isn't that pretty plain? There's somebody coming who's going to have God's word, and he's going to speak it to the people. Here's what he's doing. The woman at the well, she wasn't schooled in theology or anything. She wasn't a leader in Jerusalem. No. But she knew that. She said, oh, we know that there's a prophet coming. Yeah. But that was their first lie. Second lie is that they didn't know where Jesus had come from. They didn't know where he was born. You know that they had birth roles in the temple. Yeah. They had it all laid out. They could find out anybody that was born had to be registered, and that registry was kept in the temple. And these leaders had access to all of that. Can you imagine? Jesus came, and he'd been there quite a while yet, and they said, they would see him doing this and doing that, and preaching here, teaching there. And wouldn't they go and look, say, his name is Jesus from Joseph and Mary. Let's go find out. They're going looking. Oh, look at this. Because I know that. I know they did, because one place he says, they said to him, we're not born of fornication like you are, because they thought, you know, that Joseph was his father and so forth. But anyway, they knew that, and that was their lie to him. So, I think they saw it, and they knew, he was born in Bethlehem. Micah 5:2 says that's where Messiah was going to be born. Well, that's the case for the opposition. Now, the case for the defense, verses 30 to 34. The inspired logic of the man. He showed his astonishment, verse 30. The man said, now, this is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes? I think the idea behind this is, here is somebody who comes from God, obviously comes from God. Look at this great miracle he did. And why wouldn't he, if God sent a man down, why wouldn't he go to the leaders, you spiritual leaders, followers of Moses, why wouldn't he go to them first and then work through them? Because that's what they're wondering about too. No, he was astonished by that. Then his assessment of it, verse 31. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to a godly man who does his will. But God listened to this man, so he must be a godly man. He's not a sinner. Can't be. And then his assurance, 32 to 33. His unique case, verse 32. No one has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. And they didn't say, nobody said, oh yeah, I knew somebody who did that. No. It was the only one anybody ever heard of. The man performed a miracle that had never been done before. It was a bona fide miracle. Everybody knew it. That's unique. And then his unquestionable conclusion, verse 33. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Man, that is a real telling testimony. And then he performed a miracle on me and no one has ever seen. This man is from God and you're not. That's a simple conclusion. He didn't say you're not, but the hint is there. So then comes the hateful language of the judges. Now, you know, just here in this little court I've made up here, the people who were on the side against Jesus, they're giving the evidence, and the man was giving the other evidence. Then they turn to be judges. They say, oh, now we're the judge. We're going to judge. We've given our testimony. You've given your testimony. And now we're going to make the decision. What kind of court is that? I think it's a kangaroo court. So the hateful language of the judges, because they turned to judge. See, if you don't like the messenger, if you don't like the message, what do? Attack the messenger. Yeah. Don't like the message. Well, you're a bad man. And it's ad hominem. That's an argument that doesn't make any sense. So they start calling names. You were altogether born in sin. Okay. Join the crowd. We all were. Everyone is born in sin. But even King David, remember that? King David, after the sin with Bathsheba, in Psalm 51, he made a confession. He said, following this sin with Bathsheba, remember, and the Nathan, the prophet, came and told him a little parable. And then he says, that man who did that, that man surely will die. And Nathan says, you are the man. And this melted David. Well, David said in his penitential psalm, Lord, behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. Well, in this passage, he has the word altogether. What does altogether mean? Well, probably means that they thought he was more of a sinner at birth than they were. How do you get to be a sinner at birth? Well, you're born a sinner, but had he done some sinning? As soon as he's born, wah, that's a sin. How many sins could he do in that time? No. Strange. You were a sinner at birth. And that's what they called him. You're a sinner. Then they cursed him. 34b. How dare you lecture us? Well, I tell you, that's a terrible place to be. Nobody can tell me anything. Well, they didn't like that. But it was bad enough to them that he got the better of them in the argument. No question. In that debate, he won the debate hands down. And it wasn't enough of that. Now he's going back. Now he's answering back. And he's quoting the Bible. Quoting the Bible and teaching them the scriptures. They teach the scriptures. He doesn't. But he's doing it, and they cursed him. Put a curse on him. And then where they cast him? They threw him out of the synagogue. Now, he's like, well, so what? We'll go down the street to another one. No, you can't do that. There's one synagogue there, and they threw him out of the synagogue, and that means that nobody would hire him. He couldn't get a job. his family would have to disown him. Well, they'd get thrown out too. No place for worship, no place for instruction. And anyone helping him would have the same fate. No matter anyone at all, nobody would associate with him. He was a spiritual leper if they did that, and that's where he was. So the blind man was defending Jesus. I think he did a good job. But now it turns over, and Jesus defends the blind man. Verses 35 to 41. How Jesus cleared his client, 35 to 38. He discerned his need first. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, and when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" What a question. Do you believe in the Son of God? See, he had a spiritual need. He needed salvation. And John would later write in this gospel, in chapter 20, verse 31, "And these things," this whole gospel, "was written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and believing you might have life through his name." So his need was to believe in the Son of God. That sounds like John 3:16, doesn't it? "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should have what class?" Okay, we're getting better. Yeah, eternal life. If you believe on Jesus, you have eternal life. And he said to him, "Do you believe on the Son of God?" Well, that's a spiritual need. But then he declared the gospel to him. And he said, "Sir, who is he? Tell me so I can believe in him." And Jesus said, "You have now seen him. In fact, he's the one speaking to you." And some people will say, "Well, Jesus never said he was the Messiah." Well, Jesus never said he was the Son of God. No, well, maybe not in those exact words, "I am the Son of God." But he said it here, didn't he? "Who is the Son of God? You've seen him, and I'm speaking to you now." That's the Son of God. He said, "I am the Son of God." And then the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. "I believe." Well, Jesus cleared his client. But then he also uncovered his critics. There's a great division there. Verse 39, he says, "For judgment I have come into this world, so that those who are now blind will see, and those who know see will become blind." That is now. Those who now see will become blind. Like me. Those who see and become blind are those who have trust in themselves. And their self-trust and their pride blinds them to the wonders of Jesus. He doesn't condemn them by making them blind, but they blind themselves by rejecting him. And Satan then contributes to that blindness. Did you know Satan's job is to blind the eyes of the people? 2 Corinthians 4:4 says, Paul says, "Even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the God of this age," Satan, "has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them." So there's not only is their mind turning away from God, Satan is helping them. Satan is blinding them. So there's a great division. People who say, "I see," and are really blind, and those who say, "I don't see," become have better sight. Anyway, there's that great division. But now there's a great delusion, 40 to 41. "Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, what, are we blind?" And the question if you look at it properly, should be rendered this way. We're not blind also, are we? Expects a negative answer. Oh, no, not you. No. And Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now you claim, you see, and your guilt remains. Now, what did they see? They say, oh, we see. We know the scriptures. We see the Mosaic law. See, the Pharisees were satisfied with their works religion. Works religion doesn't save. Their salvation was supposed to come from their works. No. They would not accept Jesus because Jesus had a great salvation, and that great salvation is all of grace and no works. No works for salvation. Therefore, the sin remains on them. Remind you of something? Ephesians 2:8 and 9. For by grace, unmerited favor, by grace you are saved through faith. And that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God. Salvation is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. See, Jesus has already defended you too. He's before the council of God daily. And he's there. Satan accuses you. According to Revelation 13, Satan accuses them before God day and night. And he'll say, oh, did you see what Ray did? What Jesus says, I died for him. That sin's covered. Well, what about her? Same thing. He defends us. And he doesn't excuse you. He doesn't say, oh, that sin's okay. Not like your grandpa or your grandma. Oh, the little grandkids, oh, that's okay. You stepped on grandma's toe. I'll be all right. No, you're okay. Not that. The sin is paid for. Jesus paid your debt of sin. And because of that, he can offer salvation to you. God is holy. God does not accept any sin from anybody. The wages of sin is death. And so Jesus pleads your case on the basis of his death, the blood shed at Calvary's cross. If you accept that, then your sin debt is gone and you now see. That's the case here. They thought they had won the case. They lost it. Jesus won the case. And he won your case. He'll win your case all the time. And one day you'll stand before him and you'll thank him for dying in your place on the cross. And I know you thank him daily for that very thing.